This is the Social Link Podcast, episode 20.
The new generation begins in 2015.
A brand new episode of the Social Link Podcast. This is Alex.
This is Anthony.
How's it going, friend?
It's going. Just ready to record some podcasts and talk about some games.
I know. It's been a while. We recorded last week a little bit early, you know, much to a lot of people's surprise, you know, talking about the press conferences of E3 2014, and it's now over, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff other than what came from Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo, EA, and Ubisoft. I said all of them, right?
I think so. I mean, there's the other companies and stuff, but like, I feel like after the press conferences, you know, that's when we get to the meat and potatoes of a lot of things, like specifically like the gameplay of certain games and stuff. And, you know, sometimes, what's interesting is that sometimes at E3, and especially like this happened last year with The Witcher, a lot of people show us things, you know, at the show in order to disseminate much later on. And in which case, The Witcher, not a lot of people saw the actual gameplay of it until way later in 2013, and of course, you know, like, I'm going around saying, yeah, I saw that back in June. very indifferent in some ways.
Well, that brings me to a quick question about E3. Do they still do the closed door shit that they've done since like the beginning?
Or there's like,
okay,
always.
So there's demos we won't see till like next year.
Potentially until later in the year. I mean, they, you know, one thing to understand about like companies is that they have a specific window in which to release a lot of their content, and regards to screenshots or videos and stuff. And more so nowadays, we're moving towards more video than screenshots, because screenshots barely tell the tale these days. You know, like, it's cool that we can get high resolution screenshots that we can use for wallpaper, but, you know, let's be frank here. You know, if you want to judge a game, you want to see it in action, you know?
Yeah, we live in a day and age where the magazine, as much as I hate to admit it, it's irrelevant. Mm-hmm. And when the magazine was relevant, the only thing we could really do was screenshots.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, when big games were going to be launched, like Metal Gear Solid, you know, the original, people didn't see that original E3 trailer till possibly, like, 2005.
Wow.
Just because, you know, we only saw the screenshots of that trailer. Remember when they announced that at E3 97?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
absolutely. And it's like, it's interesting, right? Like, you know, like, especially now where a lot of people now look at frame rate and graphics as kind of like, you know, like things that they would look for with regards to like buying, you know, video games and stuff that they want. It's pretty important now. I mean, and we're at a point right now that we're still pretty early in the new gen that, you know, we can still do 60 frames per second and still make games look pretty good, you know? Wolfenstein being one of them. But yeah, I mean, we'll definitely be talking a lot more about E3 later on in a dedicated segment about E3.
Yep.
But let's start this off right now. So what have you been playing, sir?
Well, one game that I played, I will not talk about till next week, obviously. You know why, right?
Sure.
Okay. I'll just say I completed the game, and there's something coming up in a segment next week about that game.
Mm-hmm.
What else have I been playing, though? This is something that's interesting, a conversation that you and I had recently about my 3DS library.
Mm-hmm.
And you think I know where I'm getting at that. I am just demolishing my 3DS library at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not counting virtual console games. I'm talking about full retail games.
Okay.
And I was telling you, this is not something I've been I've done in a long time on any console where I'm just boom, 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 boom. You know, as everyone knows, and I talked about since last October, I've been on this 3DS kick with Pokemon, then Zelda, and then I moved to the Vita for a bit, and I love my Vita, don't get me wrong, you know, not gonna play System Wars here. But then Bravely Default came out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I played that, and then I broke in the middle to play Final Fantasy X, and then after that, I got back into Bravely Default, and mm-hmm. I just went, boom, boom, beat Bravely Default. Then I beat Fire Emblem.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved on to... I could have sworn I beat something else, too. I don't remember. But I beat Bravely Default Fire Emblem, and then I beat another game. And then the game that I'm going to review next week. And now I'm on Tales of the Abyss.
Wow.
Which is a Tales game I never beaten.
Huh.
Yeah, and I've had that 3DS game since it was launched 2 years ago.
So far are you in it now?
About an hour and a half.
Interesting.
About an hour and a half. And I will say, it's a pretty damn good Tales game. I love Tales games, you know? I will say it's, you know, I'll be honest, and I do agree with you on this to a degree. Tales games voice acting could be hit and miss. This seems like one of the better ones.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty good. It looks really good for a PlayStation 2 port. You could tell there's some resolution decreases in it, obviously, but it still looks good. All the voice acting has been retained. Everything has been retained for the most part. Everything runs at a solid, smooth frame rate. It looks good for a port of a PS2 game. So, mm-hmm. you know, and that's a little questionable. The one thing, though, I will advise about this game is, as much as I'm loving this game has the worst use of 3D in any 3DS game.
In what way?
It's shitty 3D. I mean, you know, you have to adjust 3D all the time on the 3DS, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's that game where no matter where you adjust it, it's still blurry.
Huh.
And no, my 3D's not broken, because this used to do it on my old 3DS. And other games such as Fire Emblem, I looked at played a little bit of Shin Megami Tensei 4. That looks good. Bravely Default looks good. Super Mario Brothers, New Super Mario Brothers 2 looks good.
Mm-hmm.
All those look good in 3D, but Tales of the Abyss does not.
Well, I mean, all things considered, the 3D-ness of the 3DS is, you know, has its days numbered. I mean, I think it's an indication that Nintendo is just wanting to use the graphical power of the 3DS to just propel, like, you know, better tricks and stuff on their 3DS. I mean, remember, like, you know, Pokemon doesn't even use 3D in a lot of their sequences.
No.
They just kind of gave up. They're like, whatever.
Yeah, Pokemon only uses 3D in battles.
And even then, it's like, it's negligible.
Yeah, and I was pretty surprised, because considering Pokemon is one of the premier Nintendo properties,
mm-hmm.
I would rank it, you know, everyone says Mario and Zelda, I would rank it its third biggest property.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, especially at this point, yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of in a resurgence now, which is nice, but yeah, it's a good game. It's got a good combat system. I have said this before, I think part of the reasons I've started this game twice and have had a hard time getting into it. I'm really getting into it now. But the main character, and I know I'm not the first person to tell you this, but that main character is pretty much a douchebag.
Huh.
In this game.
Okay.
He's a douche. He's a little selfish. A complaint about a lot of JRPG brats, they whine. This guy doesn't just whine. He's a fucking douchebag.
Huh.
He's just a douchebag. He's a prince who is forced to live in his mansion. But some friends of mine have told me it's one of the best uses of character development in the Tales series. So,
I don't know. It's like one of those things where it's like, you know, like, yeah, you have a character that you're controlling that's kind of an asshole. And it's like, it's very unpleasant to play as that person. And it's like, I almost liken it to when people tell me that the fun is going to arrive in about 2 or 3 hours from now, and I'm like, no, the fun has to be here now. I mean, or at least give me a good reason why the fun is going to arrive. If this guy is going to be just a douche from the very beginning, I mean, what is this? Like, even Disney's Beauty and the Beast starts off with a douchebag, and then, but the douchebaggery only lasts for like 5 minutes or so, and then it goes to the actual story. It's like, I don't know. It's, I guess, you know, I'm just kind of nitpicking the game right now, you know, because obviously, like, I'm not, yeah. I have no sort of inclination towards any of the Tales games, but just sounding, just kind of like by listening to what you, how you describe the character, I don't see how you could even last, like, the first several hours and stuff, like, you know.
I think the supporting cast is helping. If you had, you know, it's got a, so far, got a really good supporting cast. So that helps. I think that's a big difference. If you had a shitty supporting cast, everything would fall apart, right? I think that helps. And if they can tie it together as to why he's a bit of a douchebag. Now, I'm probably exaggerating a bit. He's not. It's kind of funny. I gotta talk something comic books lately. You want to talk about douchebaggery? I've been reading a lot of Judge Dredd.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so maybe this is why I'm giving a little patience to Luke. Judge Dredd is considered one of the greatest anti-heroes. I don't even know if I call him a hero. Let's say that he nuked a city of 500 million people to get revenge. We'll leave it at that.
Wow.
So maybe I have a little... Maybe I've seen douchebaggery at its worst in other aspects.
Yeah, but I mean, within the context of that world, I mean, it's, you know, it's, again, I have no context of it, and obviously you're getting a lot more contextualization of the character based off of what you're playing, you know, mm-hmm. which leads you to this kind of opinion of this person. So, I mean, I'm anxious to hear, like, what you'll think of the game, like, later on, you know what I mean?
Get back to me in a couple episodes, and we'll talk about it. Well, hopefully, I'll have a review.
Remind me. I'm not going to remember it a couple of episodes. Yeah. There's a lot of things that are going to be Yeah, they're going to be happening within the next 2-3 weeks. Oh, my gosh. Next 2 or 3 weeks are going to be crazy.
I know. It's we've got a lot planned. So that's one thing I've been playing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I've been playing is... I was playing a little bit of F-Zero.
What?
Yeah, I got bored and played F-Zero on my Wii U.
Oh, wait. Of all the racing games that you could play...
I know.
F-Zero.
I don't know. I just want... There's something about that soundtrack that's just awesome, and I wanted to hear that soundtrack.
Which F-Zero are we talking about?
The SNES port version, the original.
See, I played the original, like, a little bit after it got launched on my neighbor's Super Famicom, and I don't see... I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess I don't have any sort of ties with that game either. Like, a lot of people, like, say, like, yeah, it's, like, one of the best, like, racing games ever, and I'm like, well, I kind of prefer Mario Kart over it. It's, like, it's... I mean, it's not because Mario is a great character and, you know, Mario Kart is just fun all around, but, like, F-Zero was just, like... You know, like, you could, like, some of the mechanics of it, you know, and the level design were just kind of, like, typical, you know, like, kind of futuristic, you know, racing and stuff. Like, I mean, compare that to something like Wipeout, which I'll admit, I don't actually know how to fucking pilot that goddamn ship, you know, like, yeah. I find more interesting levels with Wipeout than that, you know, like, I mean... I know that when we started playing those kinds of games, specifically F-Zero, like, there was this novelty of, you know, of course, there's Mode 7, and...
Oh, Mode 7's awesome!
And, of course, like, you know, your ship actually falling in a pit, you know, because there'll be, like, sections of the track that are just holes, and then you have to, like, jump over it and stuff. But it's like, but past that, you know, looking back at it, I'm like, it's not such a remarkable game.
It's a fun game, okay? I think... Here's what I'm going to say that might piss off a lot of people, including you, possibly. I think it's aged better than SNES Mario Kart, okay? But it's not the best futuristic racing game. I think Wipeout on the PlayStation 1 was much better. I will agree with that.
You have to justify that. You can't just say, like, oh, it's better than Mario Kart.
Okay. Here's the reason why. I think the thing with Mario Kart... on the SNES is that it seems slower and it seems to have a more of experimental feel to me as opposed to F-Zero. And F-Zero just, I guess it uses Mode 7 better, than Mario Kart.
Well, the angle of the track in F-Zero is a lot higher. It's angled a lot higher. Whereas, you know, because of the nature of Mario Kart, it's a lot more closer to ground. Because it makes sense, right? You're a kart racer. You're a lot closer to ground. And naturally, you know, Mario Kart is a slower racer. Duh. It's not going to be like a fast racer whatsoever. But, you know, remember that F-Zero doesn't have the weaponry that, you know, that Mario Kart has, or even the battle mode, which, you know, basically, like, at that time, you know, is like, you know, icing in the cake. You know, like, you had, like, a great racing game, but not only that, you had, like, this battle mode, which was just this own separate game that is in addition to the, you know, the two-player, you know, racing that you have in Mario Kart, you know?
Well, I'll say this, too. I'll say this about F-Zero, though, to its credit. You are right. Mario Kart has more of a multiplayer component than F-Zero does, right? Mm-hmm. And we're strictly talking NES port versions. I'll be honest, I haven't played much F-Zero beyond the SNES original. So, I heard the GameCube one's pretty good. But the thing about F-Zero that I like is that there's these, what as the levels go, they become a little bit more thematic, and they also become a little bit more platformy. And I like that a lot, which is, you know, in some regards, lacking in the original Mario Kart. I think newer incarnations of Mario Kart have that element, so.
Hmm.
So, it's really, 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 I think it's a lot of fun. I think it's really, really a lot of fun. So, that's not much else to say about F-Zero, because it's F-Zero, right?
Right.
You know, we could talk about Pilot Wings, but I never got into that.
Me neither. Like, I had the opportunity to play it, you know, on emulator, and I'm like, I don't see the appeal, and a lot of people swear by it. I'm like, I don't know.
Well, how many Pilot Wings were there? There was one. Wasn't there one for the SNES and the N64?
Yes.
Okay. And I think maybe one for the Wii?
I think so.
Okay. You know, that's a Nintendo franchise that can stay buried, in my opinion.
Unless they do something really cool with it, I mean, you know.
Yeah. Or they could, you know, make a good Kid Icarus.
They already tried. They had their chance. Let's keep that buried for like another 4 years or something.
Yeah. You and I actually agreed on that piece of shit. So
yeah.
What else have I been playing? Well, that's an excellent question because I have also been playing a little bit of Double Dragon 2, which I don't like.
Huh.
I like the original better.
Really?
Yeah, maybe, I don't know, it's kind of weird. Maybe I gotta get used to the controllers, because if you played Double Dragon 2, in the original you had just your typical punch-kick buttons, which is simplistic enough, right?
Mm-hmm.
In this one, B punches to the right, and A attacks to the left.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So I can see how that works, but I don't know, the hit detection seems kind of wonky in it. So I was like, why did I fucking buy this?
Really? I mean, to me, like, you know, actually, you know, between all three of the Double Dragon games on the NES, like, Double Dragon 2 is, like, my favorite. Because, you know, they had really huge characters on screen, and the look was a lot grittier. I mean, I appreciated that Double Dragon 1 had this really kind of unique look to it that's almost kind of Greek-like, I mean, because it's very kind of shaded well, you know, rounded shadings and stuff, and then, but part two, you know, they kind of took a bunch of risks with the gameplay and made it a little bit more dynamic. So, like, for example, the boss fight that you had in the helicopter where this is the worst, I mean,
okay,
the worst fucking pilot in the world, right? From time to time, the helicopter door will open and suck people in it. Like, that is like the worst helicopter pilot ever, if you think about it. It's like, what the hell is this guy doing opening the door from time to time, killing, you know, the people that are, you know, coming from, like, if I were, like, the boss, I would fucking knock on that pilot, you know, that that cockpit and be like, hey, what the fuck are you doing? You're killing all our guys. Because, I mean, seriously, it's like, what are you doing?
Didn't they do something like that in Super C?
I don't remember if they did. I mean, I mean, it's been a while since I played that, but I still know a lot about Double Dragon 2, like, by heart. You know, like, the character designs were definitely a lot better. And I remember some of the early advertisements that I would see in EGM, they were actually drawn by Bronson, who did the artwork and design for Fist of the North Star.
Oh, really? Bronson yes. did that?
Yeah.
Nice.
I mean, at the very least, like, maybe influenced or looks like it. You should check it out, though. Like, I remember it because you can kind of see Marion's, like, butt peeking a little bit from her skirt
yeah.
because it's all tattered. And I'm like, ooh, okay. Of course, me being, like, a kid back then, I'm like, oh, that's awesome. But yeah, I mean, you should check it out. I mean, the artwork is gorgeous. Like, we're talking a lot, and the angle of the artwork is kind of weird. I mean, I could go on and on about this poster, but I really like it because it's very action-packed and stuff, and it doesn't make sense compositionally because they're, like, above a bunch of people, and, you know, like, I guess Billy has a whip on his left hand and then Marion on, you know, his right, and then there's a bunch of gang members below him, and I think they were just coming off of the helicopter. I don't know. It's so weird.
That box art was pretty sick, though, compared to a lot of American NES box art, too.
Oh, God, yeah. Tell me about it. Yeah, leagues are way better than any Capcom box art that's been released during that time frame.
Than any box art at that time.
Yeah.
Like, I remember Crystalis had, shitty box art, too.
I don't remember the box for that.
Yeah. Okay, so I got one last game. Just a brief side note, though. In the next couple weeks, along with Tales of the Abyss, I will be talking more about BioShock Infinite, okay?
Okay. I'm looking forward to it.
We'll leave it at that. But I've told you this tradition of revisiting favorite games of mine of all time.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, a few weeks back, I revisited Xenogears. I'm going to get back into that eventually. I revisited my more recent of my top 10 games of all time. Mm-hmm. You know what game that is, right?
And this I don't remember. I mean, you mentioned it before, but, like, I don't.
Yeah.
Not at the top of my head. Because, I mean, to be honest, a lot of what my head contains right now is E3 2014. So.
Okay. Well, it's a Western game, because, you know, people think I don't hate Western games. There's a lot of them I love, and this one in particular is one of the finest games ever made, in my opinion. And that's Red Dead Redemption.
Mm-hmm.
So I revisited it a little bit. And to see how well it held, because it has been, believe it or not, my friend, 4 years since that game came out.
Yeah, and Rockstar, I mean, not Rockstar, but 2K admitted that they consider it as a franchise. So, considering that there's only technically been two games, and only one of them was actually owned by 2K, it's very encouraging to hear that they are looking at that franchise seriously.
They need to look at that franchise, because that game is just, and to this day, even playing it, I mean, yeah, it's aged a little bit graphically, right? Of course. It's an open world game, but the landscapes, the ambiance, everything about it is beautiful. And, I mean, that game is just, that's one of the biggest surprises I've ever played in the game. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. I remember, I wasn't talking to you at the time, because, you know, just nothing personal, just communication issues at the time. It was when I would go on sometimes on AIM and just IM you.
Yeah, randomly.
In 2010, though, I remember Justin, a.k.a. Slasher Thrasher, he kept hyping this game up, and I'm like, I don't know, it's a Western game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, the reputation of the original did help it. Because mm-hmm. the Red Dead Revolver is not a good game, or mediocre at best, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay. So, just at a hair limb, you know, I was like, fuck it. You know, I was going to get Super Mario Galaxy. I had an extra $60. I didn't read any fucking reviews on it, right? I bought the motherfucker. I'm like, I'm probably going to spend more time on Galaxy 2, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not what happened. Although Galaxy 2 is fucking awesome, the best Mario game on the Wii.
Mm-hmm.
Red Dead Redemption is that game that blew my mind. It's that game that I, you know, when I picked it up, I was like, oh, it's a cowboy game, eh. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't expect it to be at, like, number 5 of my all-time greatest games.
Right.
And it has one of the best stories of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the best downloadable content. So I don't know. I played it. I didn't play Undead Nightmare. I just played the main game because right now I'm playing. Can I spoil it or no?
No.
Okay.
There was a recent sale. I mean, it's kind of, you know. I mean, let's respect other people.
Okay. Like,
that's a game where I actually want a lot of people to play. So, I mean, I would much rather leave it to the surprise of many. So.
Yeah, yeah, because it surprised the fuck out of me, too. I'm sure it did you.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I will say this. If you have not played Red Dead Redemption, I don't care, next gen is down the way, you haven't bought PS4 yet, whatever, it's cheap. Even if you don't buy any DLC, don't play online, the single player is worth any penny you pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
It is just one of the greatest video game storylines ever told. Every character's developed, every character you care for, and it hits you that very few video games do.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, it's got that experience that I had when I played my Xenogears or my Final Fantasy VIs or my Bioshocks or my Mass Effects or anything like that, or my Baldur's Gate. It's got that, you know, or Chrono Trigger. It's got that punch-gutting experience. And even with all those games, as much as maybe I have some of those games higher, it churns your stomach sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Especially towards the end. So, I mean, it's a masterpiece. And it's probably, I would say, it's a franchise I would look forward more so to Grand Theft Auto 5. And that's what I attribute, Grand Theft Auto, that's what I attribute to not making me excited about Grand Theft Auto 5.
Mm.
Because I think, what was it, Rockstar San Diego?
Yeah.
I think they're a better developer than the regular Rockstar.
You know, I don't remember if this is true or not, but I think Rockstar San Diego doesn't exist anymore.
That's too bad.
Mm-hmm.
That is too bad. I hope that's not true.
I'm checking right now, actually.
Okay.
Let's see. Founded. Yeah, they didn't, you know. Yeah, there's not a lot of information about it right now, actually. So, whoops.
Oh, wow. And that's a funny thing about 2010, too. Like, the two biggest games of that year came out at the beginning, and then the rest of it was kind of like, oh, cheap Fallout sequel.
Yeah.
You know, I think the best game that came out of that year, you know, after Red Dead Redemption, the two games to me that were my favorites were both Dragon Quest IX and fucking Castlevania Lords of Shadow.
Yeah.
I don't think anything came near, excuse me, the level of that game. Black Ops came out that year, though, right?
Which one again? I'm sorry?
Call of Duty Black Ops.
I don't remember. I mean, it's kind of like everything is kind of a blur right now. Like, you're trying to make me remember things in the past that I am not ready to remember.
How about next week when we record?
I don't. We'll see.
Okay.
We'll see. I mean, okay. You're putting me on the spot here, man. What's going on?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm kind of nostalgic after E3 2014.
I live in the now. I play games that are released like within the past couple of months or so.
Yep.
These games you're talking about, you know, I haven't played them in years.
Hey, you got to have a retro gamer. But we'll be talking about Bioshock Infinite soon, though, which is recent. So that's what I've been playing. What have you been playing, my friend?
So this kind of leads into our discussion of E3 2014, because this past weekend I've been playing the Destiny Alpha.
I understand why you could not go back to 4 years ago now.
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying to save this for you know, for my what you've been playing segment, because I've absorbed way too much of that game to even possibly talk about in one episode of The Social Link. So, but I, you know, as with, you know, Final Fantasy 14, because I'm, you know, you're interested in Destiny, so I'm just going to give you the floor and kind of like have you ask me questions, and then I'll kind of respond to them.
I think Destiny just, you know, and just real quick about what episode we're on. We're on episode 20, right?
Yeah.
We promise you we'll go past 30 this time. So we will. Yeah. So that means that since we're going to go well past 30 and hopefully to like a 230, mm-hmm. we will be talking about in the next couple months lots about Destiny.
Yes, I hope so.
Yeah, because I plan on getting it.
Mm-hmm.
So Destiny is
and
just going to rock
it. With your PS4.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to get that.
Are you really? Are you getting the white Destiny PS4?
I hope my money comes in when that white Destiny PS4 comes out.
Oh, that'd be so pimp.
Yeah. You know what? My PlayStation 3, I remember, and I don't have the game anymore because I got bored of it, but it came with Killzone 3.
Yeah. Well, it's not a bad game.
Eh. Yeah, I guess. But it's no Destiny, though, which we'll talk about right now. So, Destiny, my friend, I got to ask you a question, okay?
Okay.
Okay. So, is there a lot of the story in this game or no?
Yeah, okay, so...
In the alpha.
So, the alpha only has, like, a section where, you know, they basically dump you in a story mission, right? And when you... what I mean by that is they dump you in kind of, like, a common drop zone, if you will, in the world. And the world is, you know, the section of the world you're playing at in this alpha is called Old Russia. And from there, you actually have to trek all the way up to the story point. Now,
okay, Old Russia. Is it like all snowy? Is it cold? What is it like?
There's some patches of snow on the ground, but what's really interesting is, well, it's kind of similar to this kind of Air Force base that we have down here in Southern California, where if you're in a specific part of the beach, you actually see a bunch of like rockets pointed up in the sky, like not like actual rockets still present, but a lot of launch pads just in, you know, like going towards the distance, which is kind of like really scary. And you know, you kind of see this in Old Russia as well. There's tons of like huge space shuttles and lots of like kind of, you know, Russian style rockets pointed at the sky, you know, that are unused. And you know, it really paints a picture of the world. Like, you know how there's certain reviewers that say that the environment sometimes tells just as good of a story?
Yeah.
This is one of those. This had a really good impression on me because, I mean, this is for later on, but the environment definitely told me a lot of, you know, a lot about what happened in the world. But anyway, so you're exploring this area, and eventually you get to the story mission. And the story mission starts off, like you're going through a corridor, and then all of a sudden you see this kind of purple haze. And that's kind of an indication that the game is setting up an exclusive instance of the story just for you.
Okay.
And it's usually based off of the fire team leader. Now, you can have up to two other friends join you in your fire team, but if you want to go through a mission, it's usually whoever activates it gets to do their story. Okay.
Oh, okay. So
basically, like in this particular case, I started it solo. And so, you know, like, and the way that it starts is kind of interesting because there's kind of like this gate that's closed, and then Ghost, which is this kind of like companion that you have that's kind of like, you know, similar to Guilty Spark from Halo, okay, pops out.
Yeah, that little robot guy, because when I saw the trailer, I was like, yeah, it's Guilty Sparks.
Yeah, this one's voiced by Peter Dinklage, and he basically like opens the door and you go through the story mission. Now, you know, there's a section there where, you know, like, it becomes really dark and a little bit tense and stuff. And then Peter Dinklage says, like, oh, no, it's the Hive. And I was, like, thinking to myself, did you mean the Flood? And then, you know, like, a bunch of people, you know, a bunch of enemies to start piling through. And it's an interesting game, you know, like, way to introduce that specific enemy. And then after that, you go through the section again and, you know, you get to the final boss section. And then he says, like, you know, be careful, there's a wizard around here. And I'm like, what? A wizard?
A wizard?
Yeah. And then says, like, and, you know, and it said, like, if you see something floating, shoot it down. And I'm like, all right. So I kind of did that. And it's interesting, during that battle, while I was fighting the wizard, it actually casted
the wizard.
Well, it casted something really interesting, right? And it's not exactly a wizard. It's kind of like an alien being, right? And it kind of sets up that the game is a little bit more sci-fantasy than it is science fiction.
Gotcha.
So, kind of like in the same vein as Halo. So one of the things that's interesting to me about this boss that I've never encountered personally in any first-person shooter I played, but maybe you have in Borderlands, is this boss, this wizard, basically, you know, dropped like this big black kind of smoke cloud. And what it is if you accidentally get trapped in it, you get slowed down, your reflexes are really slow, so you can't aim properly, but also you have damage over time, meaning you're poisoned.
Okay, so let me go back to something. Bungie has said this is an RPG, right?
Yes.
So it looks like, from what you told me with this Black Cloud thing, status ailments, which is typical in any RPG,
mm-hmm.
is taking effects. It looks like this is like your blindness, maybe cross poison
mm-hmm.
ailment. Perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, like, you know, at first when I played it, I was like, what the hell? Like, why am I getting, you know, why am I slowing down? And then, you know, suddenly, like, I saw my health just kind of going down. I'm like, oh, I'm poisoned. Holy crap. And I'm trying to run away. I'm trying to, like, dash away. And I couldn't because of that thing. And, you know, and of course, I'm fully exposed and the wizard's there and it's hitting me. And I'm like, oh, no. And it was a pretty intense fight. It was very interesting. And of course, I've ran that, you know, that story mission multiple times later on, and I know what to do now, but it was fun kind of just discovering, you know, the trial and error of, like, learning a boss pattern, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that sounds very RPG-ish to me.
Mm-hmm.
It just does. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like Black Clouds, boss patterns, that type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much akin to a raid boss in an MMORPG, but, you know, it's, I don't think there's ever been, you know, there's ever been too many first-person shooters lately that have kind of, you know, effectively, like, used some sort of boss pattern kind of battle. I mean, I know Deus Ex, of course, did that. And, you know, some other notable games that have been released recently. Wolfenstein would be one.
I don't think FPSs use bosses at all, really.
Well, lately, maybe military ones don't, but, you know, I can cite examples. Like, Wolfenstein is definitely okay. One of those. But, you know, anyways, at the end of that story, you know, it's kind of funny, and this was something that everybody on the internet's kind of making fun of, is, you know, like, Peter Dinklage hamming it up and saying, like, that wizard came from the moon.
What the f-
Yeah, so it builds to the mysticism of the game, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, I have no context of this, and it just kind of sounds silly, and I don't know if this is final lines of dialogue, because now a lot of people are, like, kind of complaining about, you know, like, Peter Dinklage hamming it up.
Well, here's the thing. Let's put it in perspective for a second. This is a fucking alpha, okay? Who knows what part of the game this is? You know, my only experience with this is betas. I've played a few betas that don't have story elements, but I've played plenty of demos, right?
Right.
And I have played demos that, like, when I played the final game, I'm like, wow, I don't see that till midway in, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So who knows when that is? And as I know, the internet likes to just jump the fucking gun. This is my irritance with the internet and mm-hmm. make fun of it. And I haven't heard the line. I'm sure it's kind of silly. But let's be honest. Bungie, if you look at certain elements of Halo, they're kind of goofy.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Remember what were those guys called? The little aliens from the Covenant. Yeah, the grunts. Remember how they would scream and have that humorous element?
Mm-hmm.
Just like that.
Well, I mean, this is part of the story, and, you know, I would imagine that they want you to take it seriously. It's not actually there for comedic value. But, again, you're right, though. It's still pretty early. It's an alpha. It's a peek, right? It's a sneak peek. So that's the story.
Okay, so let's move on to mechanics real quick. I got a couple questions on that front.
Mm-hmm.
I have to ask you this. With this game, we've talked about it being a role-playing game.
Yeah.
From what I understand, you could customize your character both physically and both, you know, attribute-wise. Is that true, or?
Well, it's interesting, right? So you get to pick in the very beginning between three different classes, and there are specializations within those classes. So don't be fooled that there's only three. In fact, there's, you know, you're only able to play these three and in whatever subclass that they've assigned you to do. Okay. I don't know exactly how that works, but I can tell you this. There is level progression, so there is an experience point, a level system. But what's interesting, though, is that there is a section of the game where you actually gain experience on abilities that you use more. So, for example, if you keep throwing grenades, you'll actually gain more experience with grenades. Grenade tossing, if you use more rifles of a specific type, you'll gain more experience towards that, I think, and so on and so forth. So what's interesting is that the level progression that you get as a character is separate from the level or the ability experience progression that you can get in a battle as well.
Okay.
So that makes it interesting. And once it's unlocked, you can actually equip those. So
I see. So yeah. It's got that kind of Elder Scrolls Fallout, more you do this ability, that type of thing.
Yeah. You know? Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of, you know, the game I'm going to review next episode has that type of system in it. So I like that system, though. The only time I think it didn't work was way back in Final Fantasy II, the Famicom NES Final Fantasy II, not the SNES one, which is 4.
Right.
So, yeah, that's the only time I really did. I don't think that works for turn-based, but for live action, sure as fuck does. Mm-hmm. I mean, real time.
Yeah.
So more you use, is there like a healer class or a healing ability or anything like that?
No, I mean, so the way that health works, when you level up, you do not get more health. When you level up, you do get the ability to equip better armor and better weapons. So that's how they gate the gear, is through your experience, right? It does not necessarily make you shoot better. If anything, they just kind of give you better weapons and better armor to survive.
Okay, so there's better armor, better weapons. That brings me to my next question. Is there some sort of hub? Like, you go to hub towns or places to shop, rest, interact with people, that type of thing?
Okay, so the way that it works is that after you finish the story mission, you're taken to orbit. Now, from the orbit, you can go through three different places. One is Earth, or any sort of other planet. I would assume there's other planets because they did show it. And then from within that, there are three different kinds of activities you can do. Bungie calls them specifically activities. There's story, there's explore, and then there's strike. And then the other sections that you can go to is the tower. The tower is basically the hub. That is the only safe place in anywhere in the solar system.
Okay.
Meaning anything outside of the tower and that immediate area where the traveler is that big white ball on Earth, is pretty much taken over by the darkness.
It's hostile.
It's completely hostile.
So what kind of places exist in the tower? Are there NPCs to interact with?
Yeah, it's cool because, like, the first time you get introduced to the tower, they basically, like, give you mini quests that kind of introduce you to certain areas. So, for example, you can get mail from, you know, from other people or from Bungie, and you can get, you know, rare items and stuff from there. There is a shop where you can, you know, buy your armor. There is a person who is a gunsmith who sells you guns. And then there's very specialized people. So for armor, you get specific armor depending on your class. Okay. Each person, there's a different specialization for each. And then there's also this guy called the cryptographer or whatever. Because sometimes when you're exploring, you'll get a rare item that you cannot use right away until you actually go to this person and have them decode what that is. It's kind of like unidentified items in Diablo. And you're using a scroll of identification to actually identify them and to kind of figure out, oh, okay, this is actually a level 50 weapon or whatever the hell. It's similar in idea, but it's interesting because you level up too, depending on how much rare items you take to the cryptographer to kind of decode, you know?
Okay. Yeah. It seems like it mixes a lot of elements of dungeon crawlers with, you know, traditional RPGs and stuff like that.
It definitely has that loot lust. I mean, they have, you know, purple rare items. They have green rare items and so on and so forth. The other thing, too, that you can do is I want to say they're called entitlements, but I forget the exact verbiage. But what they are is they are challenges that you can take and you get extra experience and possibly currency. If you complete them, like, for example, beat a strike mission without dying or get a total of 5,000 experience without dying, which is pretty damn challenging if you think about it. And then, you know, exploring a little bit outside of that, you also get to buy a new ship because when you go into orbit, you obviously have a ship. Everybody starts with the same ship. I actually bought a new ship. So that was pretty awesome. And then you can also buy a new Sparrow, you know.
So which there's is space the- battle in it.
No. At least I don't think so. You also get a new Sparrow. You have a hover bike in the game. Everybody starts with a hover bike in the game that you can summon at any time, which is great, and run over things. I mean, that's pretty much the tower, you know. Like, and then
real quick, though, go ahead.
And then the last part is there's the Crucible, which is the player versus player part, which I did try.
Okay. Well, real quick, the NPCs in the tower, are they fleshed out at all? Or, well, this is an alpha, so maybe not.
It's more purposeful, right? So they're like, there's the mail person, there's the quest person, you know. So they're very purposeful right now. And there's hardly any semblance of story outside of the story mission itself.
Okay.
If there even was one.
Okay. But let's just keep in mind, this is the alpha, not even the beta yet.
Yeah, so, and I heard the beta is going to have more stuff.
Okay, so yeah, let's not even... If the story stuff is scant in this version, it'll probably be more full in the final. And I'm sure Bungie will flesh out the NPCs or something.
Mm-hmm, somehow, yeah.
Yeah, so that's that. Now, I was reading up on something about this game. Please explain to me what the three different styles of play. Strike, story, and explorer.
Yeah, so the way that the game is described is that these are three different activities, and each of them have different intensities, right? So let's say, you know, you and I are in the game and we just finished a story mission and we just kind of like want to mess around because we're waiting for a friend and we want to do strike. We can do that in explore, which is a very low intensity activity. And what that is you can actually explore the entirety of the area that, you know, you want to explore. And you get random quests. I mean, they're not meaningful story-wise. They're just like, hey, you know, we want you to investigate this. You go here. And then from time to time, you encounter other players. And then, of course, other activities, like public events. It's interesting because the way that they do these, you know, like encountering other players is very similar to Journey. They just kind of disappear, and then they kind of reappear. Like, you know, a completely different player will just kind of reappear, and you don't even know you're being moved around in different parts of the servers and stuff.
So if it's like Journey, because one thing Journey did do was it didn't give you any screen names or anything like that.
Well, it did. It does give you screen names, but when they go way further away from you, like, they'll probably just disappear forever, and then if the computer or the server basically says, like, okay, well, you know, this person is kind of getting into the same area as these guys, let me put them over here in this server, and it's very kind of odd and seamless. And it's very interesting, because you never get more than 6 or 8 people in one area in explore, or even the section prior to story, because the section prior to story, people might be doing explore while you're doing that, and you won't even know because you're just going to story, you know, and they're probably out there messing around doing some other thing, you know what I mean?
What, you know what I'm gathering from everything you told me? This alpha seems like in itself there's a lot to do, so imagine the motherfucking final game.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel it's big?
Right now, it doesn't feel big, because obviously there's only Old Russia, which is the section I'm in, and there's only 3 activities. I can tell you this, though. They nailed it with the activities. So you know, I've mentioned already that Explore is a low-intensity activity, and Story is kind of a medium-intensity activity with lulls. The high-intensity activity that I haven't described is Strike. Now, Strike is interesting because you pick that in orbit, and you get match-made with two other people if you don't have a full party yet. A party is basically three people. And then you get tossed right into the action. There is no Explore part that you have to get to the Strike area or anything like that. You are in Strike immediately. And that is a full-on 30 to 45 minute high intensity battle left to right, and it's just pretty insane. It's and that's probably where you'll get the most loot. But yeah, I mean, I feel that, you know, they did a good job with differentiating these activities from something like Borderlands, because a lot of people compare this to Borderlands, which, as I've described to you, it's probably pretty different from Borderlands as you could ever be. Because, for example, if you're exploring, you can never trigger a strike. Or when you're exploring, you can never trigger a story. You have to explicitly go back into orbit and then trigger those activities.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because you have to set the difficulty of the story and strike missions from orbit. And what those do is they have some sort of armor and weapon modifiers. And essentially what will happen is they'll tell you, like, okay, instead of having plus in, you know, weapon damage, plus in this and plus in that, you'll only have plus in an armor, and but it's only going to be 10% as opposed to the usual 40% for Legend. Because there's two difficulty levels. There's Brave and there's Legend. But, you know, but what happens is the amount of enemies and how difficult the enemies are vary depending on the difficulty you select.
Yeah, yeah. It Brave and Legend throwbacks to Halo.
Yeah.
Kind of. So, I mean, it just seems like this game just has a lot packed in, even with the alpha. You said it's not very big, but it just seems like there's a lot to do regardless.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, with, you know, the people comparing to Borderlands, the three modes, I haven't played the alpha, but I can tell you that, in my opinion, differentiate itself from already Borderlands. Because when you play Borderlands, when you go out into, you know, the enemy areas, what is it? It's you just get attacked, and you can't really explore. Exploratory mode sounds like, you know, like a maybe even Journey-esque type mode.
And it's very vast, you know? Like, I mean, I always felt that sometimes in Borderlands, it's very kind of claustrophobic in the areas. Even with the vehicles, it's still very kind of small. But there are areas of Destiny that are really kind of wide open and stuff. And, you know, and that's why they gave you the Sparrow to be able to explore. I mean, There's only one way to explore some of those areas, and that's really with that thing. And it's really kind of well done, the way that they've kind of laid out the land and all the challenges. And, you know, and I had a blast just totally exploring the world, you know, very low intensity thing. I was really surprised the kind of stuff that we found, and even some of the stuff that we saw from E3 of last year, actually. So
I think that's, you know, I think that's awesome that they're doing that, because they're giving you a game to experience in three different ways. And that's cool. That is cool because, you know, there's times when I've played my Skyrims, you know, as critical as that game is, it's very vast. But there's times that I just want to go into those fields, not worrying about some fucking giant attacking me.
Yeah. Oh, that'll still happen. Like,
but not
still
as often.
I mean, there'll be public events and stuff like that that'll still happen and stuff to disrupt your exploration. But, you know, you can just hop on a Sparrow and then, like, get the fuck out of there if you don't want to.
Okay.
You know, I mean, you will always have that option.
I like that. I really do like that. I really, really do like that. And you know what? This is a must-buy for me. My only concern is this. Bungie, in my opinion, has a history of redundancy in their design. And, you know, I'm not going to complain about it, because just go watch any show that I talk about Halo. Listen to any show that Alex and I have talked about Halo, and you'll know why.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that there's a redundancy to this that the Halo games up to, with the exception of Reach, suffered from?
You know, I feel that the enemies are kind of interesting, and I feel that if you are a veteran FPS player, you should strive to play the game on Legend, if you can. It is very, very challenging, though, and it actually got to a point one time that Ted actually rage quit. We were doing a strike mission on Legend, and he didn't even know what Legend was, and we were doing a basic defend a spot for three waves kind of thing, and we could barely go through the second wave of enemies. So in terms of, there is, you know, the shooting is there. It's very serviceable. It feels a little bit closer to Call of Duty than it does Halo, because it does have ADS, but it varies from weapon to weapon. There are some weapons that are really good shooting from the hip, and there are weapons that are really good with ADS. You know, it's just what it is. There are different kinds of guns, basically. But there is strategy involved, so you can't just be like, oh, I'm just going to shoot everybody, blah, blah, blah. Because remember, this is an RPG, and everybody has health bars. So you can't just run up to somebody and melee them and then one-shot them. No. I've seen too many people do that when I'm playing with them, and I'm like, what are you doing? Like, obviously, they have a health bar. You're not going to be able to knock them down in one hit. You know, and the melee here in the game is pretty interesting. Each class has a different kind of melee, and each of them have very different advantages. So I'm playing a warlock in the game, and the way that grenades work is that they have a cooldown timer. So you can't just toss a million grenades and then, you know, like in one room and then all of them go off. No, you have to wait until you get to use the grenade again. However, the warlock, if you melee somebody, if he or she gets the ability, special ability of something with a melee that basically quickens the cooldown timer for the grenade, you can get your grenade sooner.
Holy shit.
And the grenades are also different on a per class basis. The grenade that I have is a damage over time. So if I throw a grenade and if there's any enemies within that grenade area, while it's activated, they will get damage over time. It's almost like poison.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is screaming RPG.
Mm-hmm.
The more you tell me about it, I'm like, you know what? This is, I hope there's a lot characterization in the story, but in terms of gameplay, it sounds like it has a lot of depth.
It sounds like if you were able to play Mass Effect with two other people.
Nice. I like that.
The look of it and the feel of it reminds me a lot of Mass Effect.
Okay. That's not a bad thing.
No, not at all.
Not at all. You know, and mind you, again, we're two guys. Well, at least I didn't mind the ending to Mass Effect 3, so there you go.
Mm-hmm.
But not to go into that tangent, but back to Destiny. I don't know. It just, I there's so much I want to ask you.
I know. We don't have enough time to do it.
and we got to talk about, because there's a couple things I want to talk about. How about we do this? Throughout the summer, we'll talk more about Destiny.
Yeah, I mean, the beta is going to come like in July 17th. I mean, I wish you had your PS4, but I know that you won't be able to get it till later, because it is going to be a beta for anybody who's pre-ordered a game, and it's going to be on July 17th, and there's going to be more content, allegedly. So this will not be the last time we talk about Destiny.
No. And with me wanting to get the game, even if I get it a week after launch, mm-hmm. we will fucking talk about this game.
And probably play it to no end.
Yeah, because, like I said, I love RPGs, I love the stories, and from what I read of the story with the whole concept of the Traveler and all that, that sounds fucking cool.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And some of it sounds kind of throwback to, you know, a lot of people tend to forget that. Bungie actually made a very dark FPS, darker mm-hmm. than Halo, yeah. And that's called Marathon.
Yeah.
And it kind of reminds me of Marathon in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, there's just a lot to talk about Destiny alone.
Yeah.
So, how about Final Fantasy 13? I'm just joking.
Oh, jeez, yeah. I mean, I wish we can talk about it, but it's still status quo. I'm still trying to get, like, item level 52 so I can mm-hmm. continue my quests, but it's not happening. Okay. Although, you know, kind of tangentially, you mentioned something along the lines of, like, you know, not judging everything on an alpha and a beta and stuff, like, you know, like, I think, if I remember correctly, you have a rant about that.
I do have a rant on that.
Mm-hmm.
I do. It's just something that we tend to do. You know, we just judge a whole game based on a demo, both positively and negatively. And then sometimes, you know, we're too positive about it, you know, and it turns out like shit, Aliens, Colonial Marines, and, you know, we're prejudgmental on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, shall I rant?
Sure.
It's been a couple episodes, maybe more than that, since I've done a rant. But a rant needs to be done, and I feel that with E3 ending last week, it's appropriate to do this rant. Now, I've been guilty of this, I think everyone has been, but let's take a look back at gaming history. Back in 1996, I got my first PlayStation, happy as a motherfucker. 13-year-old kid, got a PlayStation 1. Fuck, PlayStation, yeah, whatever. Got a PlayStation 1 and was super happy about it. Then there was these things called demo discs. And the first thing I ever owned was a demo disc and Battle Arena Toshinden, which we won't even speak of right now. This demo disc was this fascinating thing where you could demo games. And that, to me at that point, with someone who owned an SNES, a Sega Genesis, a Nintendo, demos were kind of strange. These strange things, you know, we get to play a game before we buy it, you know, a little bit of it. Wow. Cool. You know, years gone by, the demo has taken various forms. Now we have betas, alphas, you know, it's a whole different thing. You know, demos are still released. You know, you download them as opposed to them being on a disc. In some cases, they still are, that type of thing. But here's the point I want to make out. And this has been a flaw that's been going on for a while. Let us not base a game on a demo itself, whether that's a demo we play or even a demo we see, such as something at E3 that most of us cannot touch. Now, a couple years back, there's a game that was announced that recently came out, and that's called Watch Dogs. Now, personally, I haven't played it. Alex would, of course, know more about this game than I do. But here's the deal with Watch Dogs. Everyone wanted it to be like the E3 demo, blah, 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 blah. And from what I understand, it's a decent, solid game, you know. And in a lot of cases, you know, from what I understand, it's not a bad game, but it's not what people expected. And I think it's the same thing if you go back to E3 2006 with Assassin's Creed. A lot of us were disappointed. We cannot base our full opinion on the game based on the demo, whether it's positive or not. That's something I've learned. You know, it could also have a negative effect. I'm guilty of this because, you know, we cannot blame the demo for making a game bad either. For example, Alien Colonial Marines, a game that you all guys know, that all of you guys know, that I despise with every fiber of my being. But, let's be honest, you know, that E3 demo was pretty cool. Fuck them, they deceived us. No, you gotta understand, those E3 demos are designed on a different basis than actual full games. It's easier to build a full, impressive demo as opposed to, say, you know, a full game. So, maybe that's what it was. That doesn't change the fact that Alien Colonial Marines was a shit game, but let's not blame the demo for that. Blame those guys. You know, the demo is a different piece. And then look at demos that have had the reverse effect. BioShock. I remember when the BioShock demo came out. I never played it, but the response was universally negative to that game. It was so bad that people almost didn't buy that game. But then when the actual game came out, of course we know what happened. We were all blown away by it. Most people were anyway. So here's the thing. We cannot fucking blame base demos as our final opinion of the game, or whether we should buy it. It could give us a feel. You know, that's the tricky thing about buying a game. I think the best demo for anyone else, and this is getting harder to do these days, is renting a fucking game. I mean, you know, video stores are pretty much irrelevant these days, thanks to Redbox and things like that. But there's no way we can really rent a game unless there's some sort of online digital system to do so, and I wish there was. Maybe that's the way to go. But renting games and things like that, I don't know. Demos are a tricky thing because they can steer you the right way and they can steer you astray, and it's hard to say. And sometimes not every demo will steer you the wrong way. Some demos are accurate portrayals of a game, you know. But you gotta understand too that some of these demos are early, you know, representations. Look at those early Final Fantasy demos. You know, the Final Fantasy VII demo that came out with Tobal No. 1 back in 96. That demo is so different from, you know, the final game. You know, there's a lot of things different. Same with Final Fantasy VIII demo that came with the, I believe it was Brave Fencer Musashi. That game even had different music because, you know, it sounded too similar to the rock or something like that, I remember. I don't know. Some nonsense like that. Who fucking cares? But here's the deal. Don't judge a game based on a demo, whether it's positive or not. So, there you go. That's all I gotta say on that. So, that's what I have to say on that.
You always end it that way.
I know. That's my new closing. I can't use my old YouTube. Oh, hey guys, make us out. You know, I can't do that. So, I have to come up with something else.
Oh, jeez. I like that. I like the old closing.
Hey guys, should I do it for old time's sakes in my next rant?
I don't know. I mean, it's all up to you. I mean...
I'll do it. How about that? How about I do it? Because sure, I've been wanting to do it.
Sure, why not?
Okay, so there you go. And if you're listening to this show and have no idea what Magus is, that was... Alex and I actually, real long story short, I met Alex through YouTube. I have a channel called Magus X1. I was known as Magus, the video game ranter guy, and that's that. So, there you go.
Yes.
So... anything you have to say about my rant?
I mean, I can go in very different directions here. I mean, it's obvious that, you know, I mean, there's a lot more problems, right? I think it's lack of knowledge by a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, who basically, like, you know, think that, you know, like, oh my god, this is representative of the final game. No, this is a sneak peek, and that's why they keep telling you, like, by the way, this is not done. In fact, in the beginning of Destiny, they even tell you that, you know, the game is not done. They tell you, like, by the way, we thank you for actually joining us. You know, the game is still very early, so you might encounter issues. And there are issues, by the way. Hope you guys enjoy it. So I'm like, all right, cool. And it, you know, and I understand what they're trying to do. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and a lot of E3 trailers, you see, this is recorded footage of a game still in development or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... like I said in the rant, you know, demos, my earliest experience with demos was fucking the PlayStation 1 days, you know? Mm-hmm. I had a 3DO, but I don't remember any demo discs with it. I actually owned the 3DO. So, yeah.
But I mean, it's important to note that even if they are not entirely representative of the final gameplay, you can kind of have an idea of what the vision is. And if in a way, you can tell if that aligns with what your vision of the game is and whether you'll like it or not, which mm-hmm. is why I still feel that demos and alphas and videos kind of give you an idea of whether you'll like the game or not. I honestly thought that Infamous Second Son is something that I was going to like, that they were going to change it, but they showed it really well. But when I actually played it, it turns out that, okay, well, this is Infamous 2, but prettier.
Yeah,
so that was a little bit disappointing, but you know, but thankfully they did announce that Infamous First Light is coming out in August, which is actually a standalone Infamous game, and I'm like, yes,
and it's like $5 or something.
Well, 15.
Yeah, but still, and you can play it alone, right? You can play it without the main.
It's standalone, it's by itself.
Yeah, so that's pretty awesome. Speaking of E3 announcements and gameplay shown, along with Infamous, there's a lot of stuff that we didn't talk about in last week's show, right?
Yeah, I don't remember if we actually talked about Mortal Kombat 10.
We did.
Okay.
We did. But there's one game I've been itching to talk about.
Okay.
Alien Isolation.
Oh, yes, there is that. This is my creative assembly who... Oddly enough, they made the Total War series. They made, like, RTS games.
Weren't those pretty good?
Towards the more recent ones, I've heard mixed things, but in the beginning, Rome Total War and all those things were pretty good.
Awesome, awesome. Well, that's a good thing. But Alien Isolation, I think, is a game that... Okay, I'll be honest. I still have some some concerns about it, right?
Okay.
As you know, I'm still... tasting the taste in my mouth of Alien Colonial Marines. Now, to be fair, Isolation is a completely different developer, right?
Yes, they are.
Then it's not Gearbox.
It's not Gearbox, yeah.
But, you know, let's talk about this, because Aliens has a kind of mixed history in the video game world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had bad games, like a bunch of the LGN games from the NES days.
Oh, yeah, ugh.
Yeah.
And SNES days, too, by the way.
And Genesis, the horrible Alien 3 game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But then you had good ones, like a couple of the games with the Alien vs. Predator moniker. That Atari Jaguar game was actually the best game on that platform. And it's a very good FPS.
Yeah.
And then you had the great but forgotten Capcom beat-em-up.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that, you know, that great beat-em-up. And then you move further along and, you know, you've had, you know, I think a sequel to Alien vs. Predator that was good. But then you had Alien vs. Predator from 2010, which was shit.
Yeah.
And then you had Alien Colonial Marines, which a lot of us thought was going to be good, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And, oh boy, Alex knows the pain I went through that game.
Well, if you look at the review on the website on GamerHorizon.com, you'll see the pain that Anthony went through.
Physical pain.
Yeah, physical pain, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Literally. But, you know, Isolation, I saw a demo on game trailers, I saw a demo run on other things. I think this looks fucking good. Mm-hmm. And one thing you and I have talked about recently, I think we should briefly touch, is there's a new style of survival horror, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's not entirely new,
but it's been around for quite a while. Amnesia made it popular.
Yeah.
You know, on the PC, and a lot of people kind of took notice. And there's actually a couple that's on the PS4. Like Daylight is one of them, and Outlast is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And Outlast I played, and that's really scary.
Yeah. And if you want to go further with, you know, like you mentioned Outlast and stuff like that, and Amnesia, of course, if you really look back at it, these games took root probably in Clock Tower, right?
Yeah, I mean, Clock Tower did have those pieces of gameplay, but it's a lot more horrifying in Amnesia and Outlast, and of course Alien Isolation is because of the first person view.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing this weird hybrid of first person survival horror and mechanics from Clock Tower. And in a way, if I remember correctly, Silent Hill, was it Shattered Memories for the Wii?
Yeah, was that the one that was kind of a reboot of the original?
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of trying to do the same thing, but, you know, like, obviously, like, other people have made more successful iterations of that sort of gameplay.
Yeah. I never played Shattered Memories.
Mm-hmm.
Have you?
Yeah, I finished it.
What did you think of it?
Interesting. I can't really say anything past that. I really liked it. It's not, you know, it's not the best game out there. It's a good game.
Okay.
I can probably rate it like a low 8 out of 10.
Oh, cool. We got a mini review from you.
Yeah.
Of a 5-year-old game.
Yeah, exactly.
But back to Alien Isolation, from what, you know, the developers have said, let's talk about the alien itself for a second. I heard they claim that the AI is so impressive in this that even though they developed the game, they still don't know. It's so unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
That each time you play it, it'll be different.
See, I'm a little bit skeptical about this because, you know, the way that AIs usually work is that they give them motivations. So I don't know if the AI is just kind of like doing a dice roll.
You know,
it's kind of like, oh, I'll explore this area, I'll explore this area. Or if they programmed it to feel instinctual, right?
Okay.
There are some people who have seen it who said, like, it seems like a dice roll, and it's still pretty scary. Because you can't fight. You can't fight the alien at all.
It's like a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, you cannot fight the alien. If you try it, you're dead immediately. And, you know, I've seen, like, a lot of videos, like, showing that it is a, you know, a legit threat. But I feel that the mood and the feel of the game is pretty tight. Now, here's the thing. I watched Alien recently because a friend of mine had never seen it before.
Wait, what?
Yeah. And watching that movie, that was about 2 hours long. And, you know, the alien was not in the whole movie, right? I don't know if $60 and I don't know, 10 hours of gameplay would keep me glued to this game. Because it feels to me like that this experience is so intense that you probably would not have a lot of breaks. Because, I mean, if the implication is that the alien is always after you and can pop up at any time, you need to be able to find lulls wherein you can be like, all right, I'm a little bit safe here, and then I can go out again, you know? Because, like, I don't know if you've ever been to a maze at a theme park, you know, during Halloween. Have you?
I've been to a corn maze.
Yeah, something like that. So okay. There are usual lulls, right? Because they want you to kind of... Because if you're going to get scared all the time, where's the suspense in that, right?
Right.
You know, so I don't know if the experience with the alien is going to be constant or if it's going to be calculated, which is why, again, it goes back to the AI. Is it going to be like the director AI in like Left 4 Dead, where it's kind of smart and it's kind of going to leave you alone and then it's going to spawn like, you know, somewhere? Or is it really physically going around the ship, you know, and kind of exploring? There's a lot of questions to be answered, and it's all very concerning. But I mean, if you look at games like Outlast again, you can kind of see that they've already solved that problem somehow. And I hope that the developers apply those solutions to this so that the game is not only suspenseful, but also have those moments where you could, you know, you can really kind of, you know, like have memorable, emergent kind of stories, you know, coming out of it. Because also, I don't know if you know this, but the alien is not the only thing out there.
Yeah. I did not know that. Okay, explain.
There's also, like, you know, other characters like looters and all that stuff, and, you know, that might kill you. And there's, like, faction, not necessarily factions, but, like, people who are trying to kind of get provisions and stuff that might be protective of their provisions that they've gathered. And, you know, it's kind of an interesting, you know, kind of situation.
What about, like, maybe, you know what I was thinking they should add, considering you watch Alien recently? A constant theme in those films is there's an android.
There is an android in there.
Okay, see? That would add to the tension, I think.
Yeah. But the thing is that Alien has, though, is the interplay between people. When I heard that there were going to be people there, I felt that was actually really interesting. Because, you know, that's going to have to interplay with the existence of the alien. But again, there's too many questions with regards to this. But at the same time, this is a genre that is not, that Alien is not necessarily pioneering in. There's other games that have pioneered in this genre. So I'm kind of curious as to how much they can actually make out of this genre, like anything new, or, you know, like how they can copy the experience from the movie, so to speak.
Well, as a fan of that franchise, I'm pretty excited for it. So we'll see. You have some good valid points. I just think it's a game I'm looking forward to. It's one of the ones I probably will get, but we'll see as more things are revealed, launch trailers, that type of stuff. So
I want to talk about Metal Gear Solid 5 Phantom Pain.
Ooh, okay, I'm down with that.
Did you see the trailer that they released today?
I saw the trailer that they released at E3, but not the one today.
Okay, so have you played Peace Walker recently?
Not recently, but I have played a good chunk of it.
Do you remember the Fulton recovery system?
I think so.
That's the one where you basically attach a balloon to somebody and they fly into the sky and then they disappear and they wind up in your base.
Yeah, that's right. And then you can assign them the different jobs in the base, like to be a cook and shit.
Yeah, so that's back.
Okay.
But the thing is, with this trailer that they released today is June 19th, they kind of abused it, and they basically full-ton recoveried everything, including a sheep and a container. Yeah. And I don't know why this is pertinent, but they also showed, like, that the horse that Snake was on is able to poop.
Oh, it's Kojima humor, man.
Also, a lot of people complain that the cardboard box doesn't exist, but now you can actually do research in Mother Base and actually get, like, a next generation cardboard box that can open on any side, and can actually, like, propel you forward.
Okay. Interesting.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. You got, if you go back to even Snatcher and Police Knots, Kojima has this weird thing for poop and sexual humor that is creepy. Okay, creepy is, you know, okay, and...
I'm not so concerned about that.
Okay.
I'm more concerned about, like, this dude who was basically playing this game, abusing the full-ton recovery system and recovering basically everything. And it seemed like, it seemed broken.
Okay.
To be quite honest. Like, I was looking at it and I'm like, he is full-tonning everything. He is tossing everything up in the air. And I'm like thinking to myself, if you're an enemy and you're looking up at the sky and you see a bunch of balloons and a bunch of planes picking up those balloons, wouldn't you use a surface-to-air missile and take them down?
Jesus.
You know, and it's like, these are bases. You would think that that would be one of their, you know, one of the things that they would do. But they don't. So, I mean, this might be nitpicking, and I'm still going to get the game, of course, but it doesn't build confidence, you know, like when, you know, this dude is basically, like, just tossing everybody, and including, like, enemy soldiers, up into the atmosphere to pick up, to put into Mother Base, you know?
I don't like that.
Yeah.
I'll agree with you on that. I'll go watch this trailer after this podcast.
Yes. And then, you know, maybe, like, bring it up to me, like, next week, and then we'll talk about it.
Yeah, you kind of got me terrified. But,
terrified.
Yeah, a little bit. But I still need to play Ground Zeroes, and, you know, we'll see how it all plays out. Now, question. When does Phantom Pain come out?
Okay, there is one source that I can say that almost definitively that they said it's going to be at the end of 2015.
Oh,
so, it's still a while.
Fuck.
Yeah.
You know what? Think about 2015 for a quick second. Zelda.
Mm-hmm.
Goddamn, possibly Final Fantasy 15. Possibly. Now Metal Gear, and then what, Halo 5?
Yeah, Halo 5 is next year.
If all...
And Tomb Raider, the second Jesus. Tomb Raider game. And think Uncharted 4.
Jesus Christ. Think about what next year is going to be.
And Batman.
Yeah.
And The Order.
Yeah. Think about next year. Some of the biggest fucking franchises.
And potentially Star Wars Battlefront by spring.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah. A lot of people are already declaring that the next gen starts next year.
And we're seeing those kind of franchises... Those big established ones with their next-gen installments come out next year. Oh, yeah. Mortal Kombat!
Yep, Mortal Kombat's next year as well. Okay, so I wanted to talk a little bit about Assassin's Creed Unity, because obviously, like, you know, all of these other games are coming out 2015. There's something really important that I heard about Assassin's Creed, and if you guys have listened to Backlog Barbecue, I mean, you probably would have heard me say this. So, hypothetically, if you're in a mission... That is a tailing mission. And if somebody spots you, the mission changes into a chase mission. So now you have to chase the guy because he saw you. But now the potential is for that guy to be killed by some sort of weird emergent event, right? Like maybe a mob kills him or, you know, he just falls off too high of a ledge. So what happens? Well, you basically just loot him and then you continue the story. Now here's the interesting part. Because you didn't tail him properly, you might have missed some aspects of the storyline.
What the fuck?
Because, you know, if maybe the way that you're gathering information is to tail him and then overhear the conversation, you know, like that's basically how the mission's gonna be. And then it's interesting because it's almost like a choice and it rewards you more by being careful. You know, so it's very interesting. And then also the one innovation that they said that was really, really important for them to do is to be able to climb down just as fast as you can climbing up.
Nice.
So now you can climb down just as fast.
Very, very cool.
Yeah, because like it used to be like you'd press circle or A or B, and then just slowly drop down. And it's like, what? It's kind of retarded.
This will be a maybe. For me. Alex, I gotta, until I play four, my friend, you know, I mean, this is a series that has been like, two's awesome, you know, even Brotherhood was cool, but then, you know, that last one before three was like, three's gonna be cool, but then three wasn't cool, so.
I don't know, I think they're doing a lot of good things with this game.
We'll see. I think the setting's very interesting.
Sure.
So, we'll leave it at that. So, other games to talk about, my friend. Real briefly, because it is kind of a re-release in the sense that we never got. Final Fantasy Type-0 is coming out. I'm
much to the chagrin of a lot of people expecting it to be on the PSP or Vita.
Yeah. I got two feelings about it. Like, I'm like, fuck yeah, you know? If we get that and we get Final Fantasy 15, fuck yeah, two Final Fantasies, right? But right. Then on the other side, I'm like, okay, this game was on a handheld. Was it made for a handheld? So that's like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm glad we're getting it. But I think they should just release it on the Vita.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But even if we get it on an HD port, how do you feel about it?
I'm okay with it. The thing is it? Are they going to charge full price for it? Because, I mean, I hope not. I hope it's a downloadable.
I hope it's like $40 at the most. You know? I don't think it should be a $60 game. I'm sure it's going to be a long-ass game because I've heard it's long. And I've heard it maybe even be the first mature-rated Final Fantasy.
Yeah, a lot of people have been saying that.
But on the flip end of things, though, I have to agree, it should be cheaper than $60.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the brand name screams 60, but it should be cheaper than that. And if we're getting 15, I think they should release it a good ways before 15.
Yeah.
Or if worse comes to worse, at least after.
Right.
So, I don't know. That's one of my other games to talk about, too. You got anything else?
So, what did we talk about? We talked about Alien Isolation.
Assassin's Creed Unity.
Assassin's Creed Unity.
Metal Gear Solid 5.
Metal Gear Solid 5. Final Fantasy Type-0.
Yep.
Final Fantasy Explorers. Have you heard anything about that?
I heard. Is that 3DS game they just announced?
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard it's kind of a dungeon crawling type thing.
Some people described it as a cross between Final Fantasy 11 and 14, which of course it perked my ears up. But some people describe it as kind of like a Monster Hunter game.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's weird because the way that people describe it is that the monsters are protecting the crystals from humans.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay, I remember years ago when one of the first games you recommended to me was that Crystal Defenders.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of sounds like it a little bit.
Kind of.
Yeah, I don't know. Probably not the same thing, but well, that's one to keep an eye on, I suppose.
Yeah.
I suppose. So we talked about what is it called?
Final Fantasy Explorers.
Final Fantasy Explorers.
Yeah.
The only other Final Fantasy game I know that's coming out other than Type-0 and 15 is the next installment of Theater Rhythm. But that's
Theater
about
Rhythm,
it.
Yes.
Yeah. Which, I admit, I like the first one, and it's the only rhythm game I like.
What is it called? Like Theater Rhythm Curtain Call?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And this one seems to have more features in it. Like, your party's a little bit more active as opposed to the original game and things like that. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it is what it is. It's if you love that series, get it. It's, you know. So, I do want to talk a game that we should have talked more last week.
Okay.
Batman Arkham Knight.
Mm-hmm.
I am very, very excited for this game.
My excitement is being tempered a little bit. I mean, the Batmobile is pretty cool. I need to see a little bit more of the interior stuff, and it's giving me the scope of Arkham City, which is good, but I just need to see, and I trust them that this is a better city than Arkham City, but I need to see a little bit more of the other stuff that they did that's new. But I mean, the gameplay looks fine for what it is. So yeah, I mean, it still get it.
Yeah. I hope it's better than Arkham City.
Yeah.
God, you know what? I'm surprised. Back in 2011, you and I did not get lynched for saying. I didn't say Arkham City was overrated. I wasn't sure how to feel about it at the time. But I know we both agreed that fucking Skyrim was overrated at the time. So I'm surprised you didn't get lynched for saying the two most critically acclaimed games of that year. So. Yeah.
Well, I've changed a little bit on my opinion of Skyrim over the past few years. I've been a little bit more lax on it. But as far as, like, you know, Batman goes, I am hopeful of this game because it is going to be the last of the trilogy. They've completely, like, just, you know, ignored the existence of Arkham Origins, which is interesting.
Yeah.
I'm anxious. I'm anxious to see, like, what they can do. I mean, I want to see that running on my PS4, because the demo that they had last week was running on a PC.
No shit.
Yeah.
The one that they showed at the PlayStation press conference?
Of course it's running on a PC.
Oh, come on.
I know. So I'm still looking forward to The Division. I need to see a little bit more of that game. I am anxious to see more of it because the trailer that they had last week was so emotionally gripping. But I know Tom Clancy games, they're not good when it comes to, like, character development usually.
No, they're not.
No. So I want more character development, but I know I'm not going to get it.
I
am appreciating that both Call of Duty and Far Cry have taken to task the ability to make a figurehead a villain. And I like that, you know, Kevin Spacey is a villain in Call of Duty. And I do like that the villain in Far Cry 4 seems to be really strong.
And you're forgetting one of the greatest voice actors right now in anything, and that's Troy Baker.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's also in Metal Gear.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm not surprised by that. I mean, Troy Baker, when I first heard him, the first time I heard him was back in Tales of Vesperia. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this guy sounds a little bit like Cam Clark, you know, the legendary voice actor. Yes. But he sounded good. And then you start hearing him in stuff like Arkham City and, you know, Persona 4. And you're like, holy fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, now he's getting the lead roles. He's like, he's kind of becoming what Nolan North was a few years back.
That's true, yeah.
Because Nolan North...
When he played, like, Penguin, right?
Yeah, Nolan North played the Penguin. But there was a point when Nolan North was playing main characters up the asshole in fucking every video game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything... You know,
Wait. Okay, the reason why you brought up Troy Baker is because he's playing Pagan Min in Far Cry 4, right?
Right, yeah.
I did not know that.
You didn't know that?
Yeah, it didn't even occur to me that was him.
He is playing... Yeah, that's why I brought up... You thought I just brought up Troy Baker for... No, that's why I brought him up, because he is playing the villain, that villain of Far Cry 4.
It didn't even occur to me, because I was looking at that character, and I'm like, wow, you know, this guy's an asshole. And then, you know, and now that you mention it, I'm like, yeah, that is Troy Baker. Holy shit.
You're like, why is Anthony talking about Troy Baker in Tales games and stuff?
I know, right?
Yeah. No, I'm just saying, you know, and that's why I brought him up. He is playing. I didn't even know it was him until he actually confirmed the role in the IGN post show.
Mm-hmm.
I may get Far Cry 4. I'm probably not going to play 3 anytime soon, but
God,
I probably
Far
will get
Cry,
that.
So amazing.
I will probably... Look, there's a lot coming out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot coming out. I still have a Tales game coming out, 2 of them this fall. I have Alien Isolation. I have Destiny, for Christ's sakes,
fine,
right?
Fine.
And new Pokemon, so there you go. Well, yeah. Not really new Pokemon, but...
Sure.
I want to talk about Pokemon for a brief second.
Okay.
Real quick. I rewatched the trailer today for, what was it? Omega Ruby and Alpha Emerald? Or?
Mm-hmm.
And from what I understand, that generation, that was when I was kind of out of Pokemon. From what I understand, that generation was not exactly the most popular.
Mm-hmm.
But watching the trailer, it looks like they completely remade those games from scratch. Because they're bringing stuff like Mega Evolutions and things like that. I think it looks cool. I'm pretty excited. comes out in November.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to get myself a copy. I'm going to get my 8-year-old a copy. And I think that's what you know what? That's one thing I love about Pokemon now, is it's something I can share with my 8-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's great. It's really like something we could both collaborate on.
Interesting.
So, I mean, on that level, Pokemon's great. It's, you know, brings people together.
Sure. Very interesting thing. There's another game that I want to talk about, and then we should probably wrap up.
Okay.
Middle Earth, Shadow of Mordor.
Oh, God. Okay.
Why are you doing it? Why are you saying that?
Because I don't know, I'm kind of sick of Lord of the Rings games.
Okay, so there's a very interesting system called the Nemesis system.
Okay.
And what it is you're basically, I don't really know if you are one of the Ring Wraiths, I'm not really sure, but this basically is set, I want to say it's set before the events of Lord of the Rings. And what's interesting about this game is that it, you know, the Nemesis system makes, you know, remembers your interactions with specific characters that you encounter. So, for example, if you ally with a specific orc, if one of the other orcs, like, realize that you've allied with them and stuff, they'll probably try to hunt you down throughout your entire adventure, or maybe even ally with that orc's enemies. Now, this sounds like a lot of smoke and mirrors, but there's a lot of really cool shit that you can do with the game, and I would highly recommend checking out a trailer or gameplay of this game, because it uses the Batman combat, but in Middle Earth.
Yeah, okay, I'll check it out.
This is from Monolith, so the guys have made Fear, so...
Okay, yeah. Okay, here's the reason why Lord of the Rings games got silly. When I saw it, was it 2 years ago, that E3 trailer where they had that kind of fighting game with, mm-hmm. you know, Sauron and Gandalf and shit. Remember that? And Gollum?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, I am, too. I mean, you know, but what's interesting is that you're playing a ranger that has wraith-like abilities, and it is open world, and, you know, and the... Just the enemy interactions alone is something that's never really been attempted before. And it's almost interesting, because if you think about it, this doesn't need to be a Lord of the Rings game, but it is.
Okay.
You know, so I think that that would be something of a sleeper hit this year. I have a very, very strong feeling about this game.
Okay. Well, I'll look at the trailer, but I'm not going to put it on the buy list.
Okay. Well, check it after. So check the Metal Gear Solid 4 5 trailer after this podcast, and then check out that, and then let me know. Text me right away.
Okay. So, I gotcha.
But I think that's all time we have left. I mean, we've gone over time on this episode again, and we still have to do the letters, but I think we got to do that next week, man.
Yeah. We'll condense it. We'll condense next week's show.
Sure.
Sound good?
Sounds good. So remember, if you have any questions, comments, concerns about anything we talked about, email us at sociallinkpodcast@gamerhorizon.com, and we'll read it on the air when we have time.
Indeed. I hope we got some new letters.
Yeah, I hope so too, because, I mean, what are you looking forward to at E3? I mean, tell us. We do want to have a lot more of a discussion with you guys, and of course, thank you very much if this is your first time. Hope you guys enjoyed it, and review us on iTunes, and we've got a lot more things in store over the next coming months. It's going to be freaking amazing.
Okay, cool. And, you know, next episode, I keep teasing, there's going to be a review.
Yes. So there will be one, so... All right, so until next week, we'll see you guys later.